Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, the 11 o'clock hour. Jeffrey Childs across the glass from me. If you remember from back in the fall, Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher joined us for some of our true-false segments. The Sports Neurology Clinic sponsored those segments, and they're back as a sponsor this February to talk about concussions, to talk about what we can do as athletes or as parents of athletes or as children of our parents doing extreme sports these days, that we can do to both proactively address concussions and address some of the neurological issues that we may face as athletes, and also reactive if something were to happen, if we suffer a head injury. So I welcome in Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher from the Sports Neurology Clinic. You heard him briefly when we were talking about the sports bars, but Dr. Kutcher, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Michael. Thank you.
Well, obviously, the you guys put this together. We were there for the grand opening back in the fall. How has the reception been for the Sports Neurology Clinic these last few months?
Well, it's been fantastic. You know, unfortunately, we have no shortage of business, but we do love what we do, which is taking care of athletes of all ages, all levels, from the new, you know, Mighty Might hockey players all the way up to the former NFL guys and everything in between. So we've been exceptionally busy. We're actually expanding our clinic here shortly to Plymouth by the end of next month. So it's really been a great adventure for us to step out of the University of Michigan and take our program and make it more available to populations across the state and the country.
Let me ask you this question. How important is it to be more on the proactive side of this and talk to someone before you start a sports career or start a sports season? Or is it more that you should wait just a little bit, you know, into a sports season?
No, it's critical that you think of this ahead of time. And even before each season or before you or have a kid who wants to start a sport, you know, understand why the person is playing that sport. What are the benefits that sport brings to that individual? What are the risks of the sport? But get a good education about brain health. And the thing is, concussions are not life-ending, life-changing events. What happens after them can be if you don't take them seriously, but concussions themselves can be experienced, treated, and you can recover from them and go back to sport safely. Getting that kind of education before you start to play, understanding what you're going to do if the concussion is suspected or diagnosed, right? The first time a mom or a dad is looking around the community and saying, hey, you know, where should I send my kid on a Monday after a Saturday concussion? Think about that ahead of time. Get that plan in place ahead of time is really a critical piece of information, I think, that people need to understand.
Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher, of course, the co-author with Joanne Gerstner of Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career, which you can purchase at Amazon.com for a pretty good price, too. And such a great book to read if you are someone that has a young family and your kids are starting to play soccer, starting to play hockey, starting to play football. You can learn more about the Sports Neurology Clinic by calling 844-252-4812 to set up an appointment. You can also visit the sportsneurologyclinic.com. And we always do these true false, and Dr. Jeff Kutcher is going to sit in and a couple of these, but we'll start with the first one. True false: a concussion that lasts more than 3 weeks is known as post-concussion syndrome. Jeff, what do you think?
Man, I'm going to take a guess here and go out on a limb and say true.
It is false. Concussion and post-concussion syndrome are two separate diagnoses. Identifying which one is present in the patient is key to appropriately managing treatment and recovery. If you could talk a little more about that, Dr. Kutcher.
Absolutely. So, you know, concussion is the injury that occurs after a brain has experienced a certain amount of force from a hit. That injury is transient. It goes away. It's usually several days to a week or two. Post-concussion syndrome is just that. The concussion is over. The injury itself is over. There is a syndrome, symptoms that are continuing for other reasons. We often hear that people, and you can think about all the athletes that people know who have missed significant time with quote-unquote concussions. That's actually not true. They've missed time because of post-concussion syndrome or other effects, but the concussion itself has been long over. Now, the key to that, the reason we really want to make sure we know the difference in each person is they're treated differently. If you treat somebody who has post-concussion syndrome like they are still concussed, they will never get better.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you look at it, and again, and that just comes back to you know, I think sometimes we still try to handle these things by ourselves, shake it off, or how much do you see them? How much has the relationship with concussions changed over the last couple of years, where when there is any type of head injury, people are much more cautious about it now?
Well, there's no doubt that I think things have changed significantly. There's, you know, I can just think about the number of athletes who come to us when I'm covering a football game on the sidelines, for example, who volunteer that, hey, doc, I'm not feeling right, or hey, doc, check out my teammate. That never used to happen 7-8 years ago. Now it's a relatively common experience. And at the same time, I think people are taking the injury more seriously. They're taking their time with recovery, which overall is a good thing. However, sometimes if you take too much time, you can open up the door for that post-concussion syndrome to come in, and then that becomes a whole nother problem.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher for our True False segment sponsored by the Sports Neurology Clinic. Jeff, our first True False, Gondrozek.
I thought it was Gondrozek.
I think it's...
That's what I heard in that post-game presser when we talked.
Gondrozek, yeah, will win Big Ten Rookie of the Year honors for women's basketball.
I'm going to take the true on this one. And if you look around the league this year, there's not really any other freshman, that's putting up the numbers that Kaiser is. 14.3 points a game. She's shooting lights out from three, 47% right now, and then had a game where she just went off last night in their win over Purdue. She's playing at an extremely high level, not playing like a freshman right now. And I think based on that and based on there's really no other candidates for that award, it seems like right now I'm going to go with true.
Yeah, I think it's true also. I mean, you look at she's leading the Big Ten in freshman scoring with 14.8 points per game. She also averages 3 assists and 3.4 rebounds. And a lot of times when it comes down to it, you have to look at people that have big games and big moments. And she scored 23 points in the comeback win over Iowa on Sunday, and then yesterday scored a career high 25 points to beat Purdue. So often when people do these awards, they look at just like scoring. Who leads the Big Ten in scoring? That's the player of the year. Who leads the Big Ten in scoring? That's the freshman of the year. As long as she continues to lead the Big Ten in scoring with, 6 games left in the season, she will almost certainly win Big Ten Rookie of the Year honors.
All right, number two on the list, Xavier Simpson will play more than 10 minutes on Sunday against IU. True or false?
So here's the thing about this is you look at Xavier Simpson throughout the season. He's played more than 10 minutes in 9 of 24 games. That's not a whole lot. But he played 12 minutes against Michigan State on Tuesday and looked the best he's looked all season. Prior to that, he had played less than 10 minutes in the previous 5 games. And so I don't know if we should 100% say that the light switch is going on, John Beilein has figured out how he wants to use him. Because you look at the second half of that game, and he didn't play as much. I think he played like 7 or 8 minutes in the first half and only 4 in the second half. And I thought he should have played more. I think he deserved it based on the way that he played against the Spartans in the first half. And so I don't think that John Beilein is 100% there that I'm making this commitment to this guy for 15 minutes or more in this contest. Yet, on the road, what we saw, enough of a spark, scoring 7 points, dishing out 2 assists. I think he has to. I think he will because he has to.
For his development, sure.
No. For Michigan.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Well, I was a little bit torn on this one as well. I went with a lot of trues today on our true false, but for this one, I went the other way. I went with a false, and he has grown and developed in that Michigan State game. That was a very big step for him, hitting a shot in the lane, dishing off that just a beautiful assist that he had to Mo Wagner. He had some really heady plays where it seemed like that light has gone on. And by the same token, Mike, we saw a lot in that game where he was in the 2 guard there with Derek Walton at the same time. I don't think he would necessarily be on the floor and get more minutes in place of Walton. I think they might be on the floor together, but I don't think, especially at Indiana, it's not the typical Hoosier team. I'm going to take the false. I don't think he will play more than 10 minutes Sunday.
I'll say this. If he doesn't play more than 10 minutes on Sunday, I don't think Michigan wins. I think they need him. I think they need his energy off the bench. I think they need the difference, the fact that they can be pretty dynamic with him and Derek Walton in the game at the same time. I think John Beilein needs to give this kid a little bit more freedom. He got a foul in that game and he didn't get taken out. A lot of times when he gets a foul or has a turnover, I've seen him get taken out immediately. They've got to let this kid try to develop because he brings a different element to the game than what they have without him on the floor.
Will it start Sunday, I guess, is
yes,
the question.
Yes, I think he does. I think he does. We'll see what we just posted. Some of these true-false statements on Twitter. Michael Spath, ITH, you can weigh in and let us know. Number three on the list, and Dr. Jeff Kutcher, I'll start with you. Michigan will sweep Indiana for a regular season series. Not seasons that they've played them just once don't count. Seasons when they've played them twice, a home and away, for the first time since the 1995 season.
Well, so there's a reason that hasn't happened since 1995, right? Assembly Hall is one of those places you see it on TV as a fan. Your team is there. You get this kind of sinking feeling just looking at the court.
Have you been there before?
Not physically, but I mean watching it on TV, very, very distinct look on television. When you just see that, you get this kind of sense of doom.
Very much those those vaulted ceilings and the crowd kind of is on top of you a little bit. It is a very interesting design, but that environment they have there is second to none when they're on, right?
Absolutely. And, I think you hit on one of the keys is going to be defense. This is not a huge, genius sports observation, but team defense, team energy on defense is going to be a huge key to this game. They showed that against Michigan State. So despite Indiana being at home, and despite that sinking feeling, I can picture it in my mind already. I can see the court, and I can just get that feeling. I'm going to go with the true.
All right, yeah. This was a toss-up for me. This is a coin flip, and part of that, most of that rationale was because it's Assembly Hall and because Michigan always seems to have a tough time there, and any opponent is a tough time there. But this is not your regular Indiana team. This is a team that looks very dysfunctional. They've suffered a lot of injuries this year. Anunoby's out. Blackman, who was lighting the world on fire for Indiana, had 33 points a couple of games ago for them. This is not that same Indiana team. And I thought about this, Mike, and I thought, well, I'm going to go with the true if I feel like Michigan's turned the corner. They've been so up and down this year, we don't know if they've turned the corner, but you take into account that this is not your typical Indiana team. This is a dysfunctional team. And Michigan, you hope after the Michigan State game, they're finally getting things heading in the right direction. So I will take the true. I think Michigan will do it. They will break that streak, and they will get the sweep.
Man, I really would like to agree with both of you. But because of what you just said about the inconsistency of this team, how is this team feeling after the Michigan State game? Are they confident and comfortable? We keep coming back to that word comfortable again. Do they feel like their backs are against the wall?
And comfortable has been a bad word, a bad association 100%. With this team.
And especially when you look at the fact that they beat Indiana by 30, and I know that Blackman is going to be out of this game, but the Hoosiers are going to be the more desperate team because they lost by 30. They want to exact revenge on Michigan. Does Michigan come into that game with the same intensity and sense of urgency? If they don't, it's not going to happen. What I think could happen in this game is I think what we might see is we might see a very average performance in the first half where Michigan falls behind. And will they be able to then understand like, oh, we're down.
We need to play catch up.
We got to get after this and win this game. God, I would so much like to say that Michigan's turned the corner and they'll figure it out. But because of this roller coaster that we've been on, I don't think it happens.
Like I said, it's a coin flip. I mean, I was either way, just like this team, just inconsistent. But I don't know. I went for the true on this one. Well, our next true or false today in our segment here in Inside the Huddle, Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman will attempt 10 or more shots for just the sixth time this year. True or false?
If they're going to beat Indiana, he has to. If they're going to beat Indiana, he has to shoot 10 times or more, and Xavier Simpson needs to play 10 minutes or more because the energy that Xavier Simpson brings, and because that means that Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman is attacking the hoop, and that means that he is playing aggressive, and that means that he's taking the open looks at three. It means that he is he's not settling for jump shots. I think he takes 10. I think he gets after it. I think that he plays another strong game because he is feeding off of Derek Walton's energy. I don't know if that leads them to victory, but I do think Muhammad Ali builds on his performance last week and does attempt 10 or more shots in this game.
Okay, so you're going with the true. I will go with the true as well, and I think this one was, out of all of our lists this week, was one of the more hands-down picks for me. And we talked about Xavier Simpson, right? And players that have had maybe a lesser role, Simpson certainly coming off the bench, will the light come on? You can definitely ask that question about Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman. I think Michigan fans have been wondering that all season from him. 6 of 10 shooting against Michigan State, as you said, more aggressive, more attacking the hoop. And I thought he did it in a variety of ways that maybe will feed into success for him in the future, right? He had a play down the lane that he made right at the hoop. He went baseline and dropped it over the right side of the rim. Handed off a couple of assists in this game. Not really shooting, but something that can get him active and more involved, and I think that's the key for him. So I'm going to go with the true as well. I think the Michigan State game was a turning point for him, and it'll have to be Sunday, and hopefully it'll be going forward.
Dr. Kutcher, I don't know if you know this about the Michigan hockey team, but they're only allowed to sing the victors after a sweep. So if they split with a team, they are not allowed. Brett Berenson does not allow the team to sing the victors in the locker room afterwards. So only after a sweep can Michigan sing the victors. Now, on a one-off, when they play a team just once, they might be allowed to. I don't remember the exact specifics of it, but you have to sweep a team in order to sing the victors. This year, Michigan has had 9 series with a team, like a 2-game series, whether it be either been on the road or at home. They have not swept one of those 9 series this year. So Michigan has not sung the victors on a Saturday night all year long. In fact, the last time they swept someone was Penn State last year, March 11th and 12th.
Ouch.
The final 2 games of the regular season. So my question to everybody today, our true false statement, Michigan will earn its first sweep of the year by beating Michigan State at Joe Louis Arena on Friday and at home on Saturday.
Man, first sweep of the season. That just blows my mind, because sweeps used to be a given with this hockey program. There used to be a regularity, and for them to go all that way back just blows my mind. But this weekend, they couldn't get it done a couple of weeks ago. They dropped just an awful, awful performance, 3-0 to Michigan State at Yost. They get a home in a Joe series, and the Joe always seems to be kind to Michigan. And I think Michigan, we talk about individuals figuring things out, I think Michigan is figuring it out right now. I think they Red Berenson has found some lines that have been working with him. Cooper Marody had a 6-point weekend. Jake Slaker leading the team in assists on the second line with Warren and Lockwood. They are playing well together as well. So I think that chemistry, that cohesion is finally happening for Michigan, and they're playing just an inferior team in Michigan State. It's a rivalry game, but I think Michigan's better. They didn't do it a few weeks ago. They do it this week. They get it done.
You know, Jeff, you made a good point about some positives over the past couple of weekends. You see some players coming together, lines coming together, being productive. I think that's great. However,
the naysayer.
Yeah, well, you know, hockey's a sport. Obviously, as team sports go, it's really about chemistry. It's about energy. It's about having
getting
system.
Good bounces.
Yeah. Good bounces, you can win a game.
Let him speak, Jeff.
Good bounces, you can get a goal or two, right? Can you sweep a series against a rival with good bounces and a couple of good lines? I'm going to say no.
Oh.
You can't put this in the middle of the season and say, turn on that light switch and all of a sudden we're playing good hockey as a team over the course of 2 games. Can they win a period or two? Absolutely. Could that translate into a game? One victory out of the 2? Certainly. The 2, though, is going to be very difficult for this team to pull off.
I don't know if I'd say that it's flipping a light switch instantaneously, because we've seen the progression. The Michigan State game at Munn, they played better. Ohio State, they didn't sweep, but they were right there. I think just them
but they gave up 3 goals, unanswered goals, in the third period of a 5-4 win. They gave up. They were winning and going into the third period of Saturday night's game, and they gave up 2 goals, including the game winner with 30 seconds to go in the game.
That's why they're learning from that for this weekend.
Well, I like your optimism, and I don't agree with it, at least for when it comes to Michigan hockey. And I tell you what, Michigan State, even if Michigan wins at Joe Louis Arena on Friday, Michigan State's last memory at Yost Ice Arena is beating Michigan 3-0.
True.
So they're going to have confidence to come back in that game. I just, when it comes to Michigan hockey right now, I'm a see it to believe it type of person. So I think false. I think that Michigan hockey needs to prove to me that they can, and I'm not there yet. I don't think that they will. The next one, this is a fun one. Coming off the Super Bowl on Sunday, leading the Patriots to a 5th Super Bowl title, Tom Brady is the GOAT, the greatest of all time when it comes to the NFL. Dr. Kutcher, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not somebody that likes that GOAT concept, right? Because you got to look at different eras, different teams, all that kind of stuff. I've always been somebody that sort of get greatest of the moment kind of thing. But I'm a believer in this particular one for sure. I think that performance this past Sunday just sealed the deal for me on top of a long career that's been really extraordinary. So I'm going to go with the true on that one.
I'm going to go with true as well. I think you know, we've seen what Brady's done. He's done it year after year. He's done it in the most adverse situations in that deficit against Atlanta in the Super Bowl. So I'm going to take the true.
I tell you what, and I agree with Dr. Kutcher here about how it's hard to compare eras. I think you can compare eras when you talk about the same position group to some extent. Like, I have a harder time saying that he's the greatest of all time when you can say maybe there's a running back. Or maybe less so a wide receiver because he touches the ball 6 to 8 times a game. A running back touches the ball 25 times a game. You could say a linebacker that could have the same type of impact on a game that a quarterback does. Maybe an offensive lineman. So for me, it's like, is Tom Brady the greatest of all time? Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. And I'm a huge fan of Joe Montana, and I know people go back to like Johnny Unitas and what he did, and people bring up Brett Favre. They bring up so many of the other Peyton Manning, but I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time, but I'll qualify it as that. I think when you look at like basketball, it's a little bit easier because all five players on the floor, while you have a center and you have a point guard, it's all more of like a cohesion type thing where you could just kind of identify, because basketball is so much like an isolation game and what one person can do in key moments. I think in hockey, again, it's like maybe who's the greatest forward of all time. You can't really compare a forward to a goalie. Because they play such a different type of game. But I think when you look at football, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. Am I willing to say he's the greatest player of all time? I'm not willing to go that far. So if I qualify it as quarterback, yes. All-time GOAT, false. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense. There's one issue, though, that I think is still on the table, and football has changed over time, right? So you can look at the same position, say running back, from the 1980s versus this, you know, this era, they're not getting the ball as much, for sure, right?
They're getting banged up more.
Quarterbacks are not. Quarterbacks are being much more protected, right? I was watching a ESPN Classic game back in the fall. I forget what it was, but you could visibly see the difference from a college game 10 years ago to today, just based on the physicality, how people were hitting, how the quarterbacks were getting hit, and that's different than today. So that's one variable you got to think about. Is it is a different sport? It's I think much safer, which is good.
It is. But when you look at that and you talk about, I mean, because to me that's looking at stats, like how do stats compare? You can't compare the stats of Tom Brady who quarterbacks now traditionally throw for 4,000 yards versus back when Dan Marino did it in the 80s, it was like the first guy ever that did it. But what you can look at is in big games, because big games translate. Yeah. They were playing Super Bowls for 50 years. They were playing AFC championships. They were playing playoff games for 50 years. What do you do in the clutch moments?
Clutch doesn't change no matter the era, I would say.
That's what I would agree.
I totally agree. And that's what sealed it for me, really. You think about the Dan Marinos and the Joe Montanas that kind of went through that era where they weren't being protected and playing great football. But when it comes down to just winning Super Bowls, big moments, and that last game on Sunday was fantastic.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Kutcher for our True False Sport, sponsored by the Sports Neurology Clinic. You can get his book, Back in the Game, Why Concussions Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career, by going to Amazon.com. You can learn more about the Sports Neurology Clinic by going to thesportsneurologyclinic.com. They're based in Brighton. Give them a call at 844-252-4812. Our final true false of the day: in any given football game on the college or NFL level, at least one concussion goes undiagnosed per game.
That's for me, I'm taking, right?
Yeah, that's right. For you.
Yeah, I would say no question. You know, concussions are a diagnosis that we can make when there's a clinical effect that we see, or the player is experiencing symptoms that they tell us, or when we ask them, they tell us about them. You know, however, the effects of the injury sometimes don't show up until the next day, or sometimes don't really ever show up. And so we have to take a wider perspective, take a step back. This is one of the things that I preach all the time to all of my up-and-coming physicians and athletic trainers is what's happening on the field during practice, during a game is certainly important, and that's you have to pay attention to that. But if you suspect an injury, you have to also monitor that person over the course of the game, the next day, the course of the week, the course of the month, and the entire season and their career, right? Because brain health is something that we want to get our players, our patients, you know, from the beginning of their career to the end of their career with a healthy brain. That means understanding that you can have effects of brain health that are not obvious during a game. So yes, I would say absolutely true that at least one concussion goes undiagnosed during a college and professional football game.
I'll take the true also just because of everything he just said.
True.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Jeff Kutcher, for joining us today. We look forward to having you on for more segments going forward in this month of February. The Sports Neurology Clinic, based in Brighton. You give them a call at 844-252-4812 to learn more information or go to thesportsneurologyclinic.com. This is Inside the Huddle on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket.